discussion when there's actually people in the discussion. I have discussions with Amir all the time, but it's much more fun when there's people around. I want to thank Rabbi Kelman for bringing me here. Just before I start, so I get a sense of who we are, because we've never met before, although maybe in the course of the next little while we'll get to know each other a bit. Are you all at York, other than you who's going to Bar Ilan? Are you all at York? No. So, tell me this, how does it work? Like, why would somebody go to York or U of C? Like, what's that decision? Just everybody goes to York, or unless you want to go to U of C, like, why would you go to U of C?
You get credits from Israel.
If you go to York, and you don't at U of C.
It's usually close.
What's close? York is close where people live.
It's like it's 12 minutes drive in U of C.
And you all live at home when you're in York.
Depends on the program.
Depends on the program you're studying, because you're studying...
Engineering, a lot of people go to
U of T. Are you studying engineering? No. But you are at U of T.
I am at U of T. All
right. And are you all in the same year, or are you different years? All different years. What happens? So there could be four different years here, is that right?
Four.
You're in graduate school in?
Math.
At UFC also. All right. Okay, so that's something. Now I have a basic idea of what's going on. So I sort of wanted to have a chance to have a discussion about a topic that really I think is, in some sense, very close to our hearts. And yet, when I first came across this several years ago, I worked on this for several years. And every time I come back to it, I get to sort of new ideas about it. I come to realize there's a lot about a topic that I would suspect we all think we know a lot about. And yet, I look in the Gemara and I look in the Mishnah and I see it very differently than we learn about. So let's throw out this question. If I said to you, what is the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? Sounds like a simple, I think it sounds like a simple question. What is the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? What do you think we would answer? And I'm not going to say you're wrong. I'm not going to make fun of you. Just throw out some answers. I'm going to try to, hopefully, if you have the answer like exactly what I say, I'm going to be very embarrassed, but I don't think you will. So, but what do you think the mitzvah is? You have to guess. What's the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? I mean, you all went to high school here in Toronto. Is that right? So what high school did you go to in Toronto? Is there only one, or are there two, or are there three? Or Chaim will find out chat. So somewhere along the way, they said something about what Mr. Talmud Torah was, I suspect, somewhere along the way. And then some of you went to Israel. What places in Israel did you go to? All over. None of you went to Israel. You all went to Israel. So what places? Interesting places. What places? Ravinders. Right? They talk about Talmud Torah at all in Ravinders? That's good. And guys? Guys didn't go to Ravinders, right? Where'd you go? I'm sorry? Gush? I'm pretty sure there they talk about Mr. Talmud. So what would you say that Mr. Talmud Torah is? Just throw out a guess. No, that's not right. No. What's the Mitzvah Talmud Torah? A simple question. What's the Mitzvah Talmud Torah? If you wake up in the morning, you're a committed Jew, you say to yourself, one of the things I should do with my day is have this Mitzvah Talmud Torah. What does that mean? If I read, you know, if I study a Mozart composition, is that a fulfillment of the Mitzvah Talmud Torah? That's already a difficult question, but now we'll talk about today. But what would you think if somebody walk up on the street, a guy walks up and he says, listen, I just heard about this thing called Judaism. I heard they focus a lot on this thing called Talmud Torah. Can you tell me what it is? 30-second synopsis. What is it? All right. Nobody's going to guess. Then I'll just go on with what I said. Yeah.
They understand the world we live in and connection to God.
So that's very interesting. Understand the world we live in connection to God. That's very interesting. That's very broad-minded of you. Because theoretically, no, I'm not saying it's wrong. It may even be the Rambam thinks exactly that. Maybe we'll get to that. But theoretically, that could mean that, you know, if I go and I study physics and I really believe I understand the way God runs the world through a study of physics, just literally physics, or math, which may be the queen of the sciences, for all I know, so then maybe that's Talmud Torah in the highest sense. It's very interesting. I don't think that's the general description, but it may be the Rambam thought that at some point for sure. So I don't know, let me throw out an idea then. If you never know, you're willing to guess. I suspect many of us have learned that the Mitzvah Talmud Torah is that it's important for Jews to sit at some point in their day, preferably every day, to open up books of Jewish learning, probably with Gemara having a central claim to that idea of being a book of Jewish learning, and to read it, to study it, and to learn from it. There's a mitzvah there of Talmud Torah. Is that at all relevant? Is that completely wrong? That sounds somewhat similar to something you thought of as the Mitzvah Talmud Torah, or you have a different idea of that? It either is or isn't. It's a yes or no question. So how many of you raise hands? Let's try it that way. How many of you think that's somewhat relevant to what you always thought the Mitzvah Talmud Torah was and been taught the Mitzvah Talmud Torah was? Just a show of hands. Okay, let's try it. Let's assume that for now. So now let's look at a couple of sources and see if that's the impression that you get. And I want to start with a whole different idea. And it comes up in a topic that I'm not going to really talk about at all today. The topic is, the Gemara assumes that the obligation, well, you tell me, the Gemara says the obligation of Talmud Torah is for a father to teach Torah to his son and not his daughter. Why that is a completely different shiur. Not going to talk about it today. An important shiur, but not one for today. But along the way, the Gemara does this very strange thing. So if you look at that top source, I said, what does women's exemption from the mitzvah teach about the obligation? The Gemara goes through this whole series of discussions to try to figure out, how do you know that a father doesn't have to teach his son, only has to teach his son? Which means, well, you'll tell me, the father, if I tell you the mitzvah commentary is the father teaches his son, who is not involved in that mitzvah then? Who's not obligated in that mitzvah? Who's not required to be part of that mitzvah? I'm sorry? Mothers or daughters. Right? So the Gemara is going to try to figure out both. So look what the Gemara says. Gemara in Kiddushin. Gemara says, Lelamdo Torah. The Mishnah said the father has an obligation to teach his son Torah. Mi nalan. How do we know? Dichtiv. Ulamaditem otam ed b'neichem. Right? You shall teach them to your... Now, b'neichem is a word that could mean children, but here we're going to assume means sons. So now, v'heichad l'agmei avua michayiv ihu l'megmar nafshe. V'heichad l'agmei avua, where his father didn't teach him, he has to learn himself. Dichtiv ulamaditem. So, ihi minalan d'lo michayiv. How do you know that the mother is not obligated to teach the son? Granted that only boys have to learn Torah, for a second. How do you know the mothers don't have to do it? So we say, the Gemara says, Dichtiv, Vilimaditem, and Ulimaditem. Now notice that. The Pasuk says what? The Pasuk has that word, Vav Lamin Mem Dalet Tav Mem. What's the right reading of it? I just read it wrong a second ago. What's the right reading of that word? Vav Lamin Mem Dalet, the way we read it. When we say Kriyat Shema, we say, which way do we say it? Right? Vilimaditem. But if you read it the way it's written in the Torah, you might have read it as Ulimaditem, because there's no yud between the lamed and the mem. So you could theoretically read it as Ulimaditem. The Gemara says they're both valuable. They both have importance for us. We read it as Vilimaditem, but the way it's written, you might have said Ulimaditem. So then the Gemara says, Kol shemitzuvet lilmod. It's only a person who is required to study Torah, him or herself, and at this point we don't know whether it's a him or her, is required to teach somebody else. Whoever is not required to learn themselves, is not required to teach somebody else. Now that's, is that obvious, or is that interesting, or striking, or weird, or just sounds right? What does it mean if I tell you that? Why would that be the rule? Why wouldn't the rule be whoever knows Torah, however they came to that knowledge, is obligated to teach Torah to somebody else? The Gemara says only a person required to learn Torah is required to teach somebody else Torah. And then it goes on, I'm not going to read it inside, the next couple of lines, but they say that now they say, how do you know, what's the next question really? If I tell you, how do you know the mother doesn't have to teach her son Torah, you say, because the mother doesn't have to learn herself. The next question is, how do you know the mother doesn't have to learn herself? The answer the Gemara gives is, it uses that v'limaditem and ulimaditem, and it says, only somebody who somebody else was required to teach, who a parent was required to teach them Torah, is required to learn themselves. So the mother is not required to learn, because no parent was required to teach her, raising the next question, which is, how do you know that no parent was required to teach her? And then the Gemara just says, because the Pasuk says, b'neichem, and not b'notechem. So it sounds all complicated, and it's all based on psukim, and that's not the part that interests me. But think about the chain of logic for a second. What I wanted to know was, here I have a little baby boy is born. Mazel tov, we have a bris, we're all excited, and now we want to start thinking about parental responsibilities to this little baby boy. So the Mishnah tells us the father has to teach this baby boy Torah. And versus, how do you know the mother doesn't have to teach the baby boy Torah? So instead of just saying women are not part of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, the Gemara doesn't say that. Instead of just saying women aren't part of this mitzvah, the Gemara says, the mother doesn't have to teach the boy because she doesn't have to learn herself. She's not obligated to learn herself. And then the Gemara says, how do we know she's not obligated to learn herself? We know she's not obligated to learn herself because nobody was specifically obligated to teach her. How do we know nobody was specifically obligated to teach her? We have a pasuk for that. But think about what that is. What are we saying now about some issue of Talmud Torah? We'll get to what issue it is. But what are we saying about this? It's not a question of, do I have to learn myself? The question of whether I have to learn myself depends on a couple of different issues. Do I have to teach somebody else? Did somebody else have to teach me? Right? It's how many generations have been discussed already in this Gemara? How many generations do I have to think about to get the answer of who's obligated to who in terms of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? Sorry? Three. Right? You've got a grandparent, a parent, and a child. And all of them seem to be involved. So I think that's interesting, because it suggests that the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is not quite so much about whether or not I sit in a room and study Torah. It's about whether or not I'm part of this chain where a grandparent and a parent and a child are all part of this chain, and that chain will continue throughout the generation. So that idea of a chain is very useful because it teaches us something about some other sources that you have next in front of you. If you look at the next source, it's Psukim in Devarim. Well-known Psukim. Psukim read like this. Raki shamer lecha ushmor nafshecha me'od. Pen tishkachet et verim asher re'u einecha upen yasuru milvavcha kol yimei chayecha. What does that pasuk mean? Raki shamer lecha ushmor nafshecha me'od. He shamer lecha. I'm sorry? Guard yourself. Be very careful. Watch your souls greatly, lest you forget what you saw, and lest they go out of your heart, call you mechayach, all the days of your lives, or then the next four words, v'hodatam levanecha v'livnei vanecha. What does that mean? V'hodatam? You have to make them known. What do you have to make known now? We don't know yet. To your children and to your grandchildren. You know what's strange about that? We'll get to this in a second later as well. You know what's strange about that pasuk? It's not so often the Torah tells you you have to tell something to your children and your grandchildren. The Torah talks a lot about telling your children things. But when we bring in grandchildren, the Torah doesn't do that so often. Grandchildren are there because, again, we're talking about this chain. And what do you have to teach these grandchildren and these children? The next pasuk tells you. You have to teach them, Yom Asher Amadat L'Tnei Hashem Elokecha B'Chorev. You have to tell them about the day where we stood before God, where it's Chorev. What is Chorev? Har Sinai. We have to tell our children, our grandchildren, we have to never forget Har Sinai. Now, those are psukim that I wanted to read, because now, if you look at the next Mishnah Avot, I won't read it inside, but it's a very famous Mishnah. The Mishnah Avot says that anybody who forgets what they learn is liable for the death penalty. Pretty harsh. Somewhere actually, the Mishnah actually takes it back. It says it's only if you forget on purpose. And then it quotes a pasuk. So can you look in the Mishnah and tell me what pasuk the Mishnah quotes to tell you that if you forget the Torah that you've learned, you're liable for the death penalty? Shouldn't be that hard. We just quoted it. Right, that pasuk that we just quoted a second ago. What's wrong with quoting that pasuk? Think about the pasuk. That's why I went to the pasuk first. The Mishnah makes the claim, if you forget Torah that you've learned on purpose, you sit down and you forget Torah that you've learned, you're violating this pasuk. So what's wrong with saying that? What was the pasuk talking about? What did you have to remember in the pasuk? I'm sorry? Har Sinai. So the Mishnah says, if you forget Torah that you've learned, you're violating this pasuk. But the pasuk was talking about forgetting Har Sinai. Any thoughts about why that should be? Why did the Mishnah assume that those are really the same thing? Try to put it together. Chain. Mishnah's assuming something. Yeah? And what it means then, that's right, and what it means then is that the mitzvah of Talmud Torah the Gemara is talking about is not so much the question of whether, you know, when I have free time, I sit down and I open up a Jewish book of learning. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah the Gemara is focusing on is making sure that from generation to generation, at least some significant group of the Jewish people have the experience of Har Sinai foremost in their minds and thoughts. They never forget it. And they transmit it to their children and their grandchildren. That's why in the next source, that again I won't read inside, but you can feel free to read inside, the Gemara assumes that grandfathers have to teach their grandchildren, their grandsons, Torah. The only mitzvah that I know of, you may know of one, I've really thought about this many times, there are no other mitzvahs for grandfathers to do to their grandchildren. And yet the Gemara assumes that grandfathers have a particular mitzvah to teach their grandchildren Torah. Why should that be now? When it comes to teaching Torah, do I have an obligation to teach Torah to whoever wants to learn? Does anybody who knows Torah have an obligation to teach it to anybody who wants to learn? Not a trick question. Take a guess. You're either right or you're wrong. You said no. It was a 50-50 shot. It was a good try. No, the answer is yes, really. If somebody knows Torah and somebody wants to learn it, there's a general obligation. Whoever wants to learn Torah, you have an obligation to teach Torah to them. But the order of priorities is like this. A father to a son is the highest priority. a grandfather to a grandson is the next priority. And then there's this general obligation. Whoever wants to learn Torah, you should teach them Torah. So there's something special about a grandfather to a grandson. And that's what the Rambam that you have in there in front of you. And I think the point is, yeah?
Sorry, quick question.
Yeah.
Where is it derived from that there's the general obligation to teach Torah? Like, father to his son?
Where does it come from, you said? The general obligation. If you look in the Rambam, that's the second to last source in this section, right? The Rambam reads, so I'll read it. It says, Kishem shechayav adam lameda bino. You have to teach your sons. Kachu lechayav lameda ben bino. He also has to teach his grandson. Shenemar, our pasuk, go datam levanecha levanecha. Then the Rambam says, Velo bino ben bino bilvad, ala mitzvah kol chacham vechacham Yisrael. Any person who has knowledge among the Jewish people has to teach any children, even though they're not his own children. Because the pasuk says, Vishinantam levanecha. And tradition tells us that the word vanecha includes any student. Children and students are the same. But the point is, it's a three-level priority. Why are grandfathers in there? Why are grandparents in there? So the answer is that it comes to this idea of a chain. And then that means the Mitzvah Talmud Torah is a whole different thing. If you spend your whole life just sitting in a room learning all of Shas, have you fulfilled what the Gemara assumes to be essential to the Mitzvah Talmud Torah? No, because it's about you learning, because somebody was supposed to teach you, and teaching it to somebody else, and going on from there. So that's already one element of the whole Mitzvah Talmud Torah that I think is worth thinking about and keeping in mind, because it means that, you know, you're all in university and we all have limited time and we all have to make choices about what we're doing with our time. So part of the idea of thinking about the Mitzvah Talmud Torah is to think about what is the point of a Mitzvah Talmud Torah? If it's just to make me a better person, so that's a mitzvah. And I'll make lots of choices about how to become a better person. And it does that. But it's about a little bit more than that too. Because it's about also the idea that the Torah and God realize that the way you keep a certain national character alive, the way in which you keep a certain nature of the Jewish people alive, is you make some group of people responsible and you say, listen, this was a central foundational event in our history, and it had content to it. Well, the content of Har Sinai. The content of Har Sinai was Torah. You have to make sure that passes from generation to generation. And that's what's going on in the midst of Talmud Torah. Or that's at least one essential element of it. So that's the first piece. Now that was interesting and hopefully somewhat different than you might ordinarily be used to. Are there questions on that? Are there issues that that raises for people you want to think about? Yeah? That's a good question. That's a good question. So the answer, I think, is that the question was, if the tribe of Levi is set aside to be the teachers of Torah, then why is it that every father has to teach every son Torah? Aren't the tribe of Levi going to do it? So there's probably a couple of answers. One answer, I think, is that Levi's job was to be focused on that all the time. But fathers, even though they were living other lives, they were farmers or whatever they were doing, still had to be in charge of or making sure that their sons were learning Torah. And the second piece of that, which is what's sort of related, is that an outside person never really knows a child fully. And that's a problem in chinuch in general, right? You get a kid, comes to your school, they're in your school for lots of hours a day, but they don't know all the family stuff that's going on. They don't really know the child as well as anybody else knows the child. But the father parent knows the child year in and year out. They see them grow from being 1 to 2 to 3 to 4. They can be, I think, are supposed to be, more able to gauge how to educate that child at each stage of their lives, and that's their overall responsibility, I think. Which is not so easy a challenge at all. But I think that's the father's challenge. That's one issue that I thought was worth keeping in mind. The Mitzvah Talmud Torah isn't only as personal as we tend to think of. Yeah?
How should this idea of the chain affect the way we make choices in our Torah reading?
Well, so I'm not sure that this one would necessarily affect the choice you make about what to learn. But I would think it would certainly affect your sense of what the outcome of your Torah learning should be. Meaning if the outcome of my Torah learning is just that I walk around feeling better about myself, or even just feeling like I'm a more religious Jew, that's not quite exactly what needs to be going on here. It's about, you know, I remember reading a story years ago, I don't know if it's true even, but a story years ago about a rabbi comes to a house where the father, or the aged father, had passed away, and they're sitting Shiva. None of the kids are observant. I'm not saying this will happen to you, I'm not threatening, this is the way the story went. Now, because of the observant, this rabbi comes to the house, and he sees a closed-off back room in the house. And he says to them, you know, what is that room? They said, oh, we never knew. He used to come home every night, and he'd go into that room for hours, and he'd be in that room. We were never allowed to bother him in there, and then he'd come out. And so this rabbi goes into the room, and it's this big medrash full of svarim, and it turns out this father had every night gone in there to learn on his own. So, I think it's an exaggerated story, I don't even know if it's a true story. But the idea that our Torah learning is supposed to be part of us taking our place in a chain, this idea that if there's anybody out there who wants to know, we bear a responsibility to share Torah with them, means that this, at least this aspect of the Mitzvah of Talmud Torah, is it's not purely personal, and if it becomes purely personal, there's a problem there. It's about Vodatam Levanecha Levinei Manecha. That's one piece of it. The second piece of it also is that it's not about the Torah in and of itself only, it's also about that Torah being connected back to Har Sinai. So I don't know about your educational system, but when I was growing up, I don't know how many times, outside of my family actually did it well, but outside of my family, how many times was it stressed? The Torah we learn came from Har Sinai and was our standing before the Torah, our study of Torah, is once again re-experiencing the giving of the Torah at Har Sinai. I don't know. I don't know how often that was stressed. But the Gemara is stressing it, the Mishnah is stressing it, and the Psukim are stressing it. So I find that to be an important, also, again, it's not a change of what you might learn, but how you learn it, and the voice you hear, right? When you stand in shul, there's this famous thing that people, when they read the Ten Commandments in shul, so there are many more people who stand up for the Ten Commandments than for other parts of Torah. So Rabbi Soloveitchik was once asked about that, because ordinarily you'd think that would be a problem. What would be the problem with standing up for one section of the Torah as opposed to other sections of the Torah? I'm sorry? Or the other way around, where this is more important, right? Either way you can say it, right? So supposedly Rabbi Soloveitchik said that's ordinarily true. But when it comes to the reading of the Ten Commandments of the Aseret HaDibrot, I don't like the term Ten Commandments, of the Aseret HaDibrot, he said, that's different. Because when we read the Aseret HaDibrot in Shul, he said, we're recreating the giving of the Torah at Har Sinai. So there it's appropriate to stand. Not because it's more important than anything else, because it's a different experience. So whether that's true or not, it captures this idea. Right? The experience of Torah is getting us back to that original foundational experience of God giving us the Torah at Har Sinai. So that's a change of character and a change of curriculum. But now look at the next piece, the very bottom of this side of the page. And this also, first time I came across it, blew my mind. I hope it blows your mind. I mean, not really blows it, but expands it. Ad heichan chayav adam lamed b'no Torah. Simple question. How much Torah do you have to teach your son? Don't read on. Here you are. You're a father. You're a father. Let's all pretend to be fathers for a second. I am a father, and Rabbi Kalman's a father. I hope not many other people here are fathers. We shouldn't admit it if we're fathers. You have a baby boy, right? You have a baby boy. When that baby boy gets to be 13, basically, they're going to be an adult Jew. Let's even give the father till 20. At what point can the father feel like he's got some kind of minimal fulfillment of the mitzvah? So for example, when I tell somebody to give tzedakah, at what point can they feel like they gave some minimal, reasonable amount of tzedakah? Any guesses about that? So this year, you can look it up in the halacha books. You have to give, even the poorest person has to give, I think it's a half a shekel a year. Ideally, one should give at least 10% of their income if they have the ability to do so. Up until 20% is fair. This year, there's things said about it. Minimal fulfillment in the midst of lulav. Sukkot is coming up. What's the minimal fulfillment of lulav? So you have a lulav and an esrog, and you have the four species, and you take them to shul, and you make a bracha, and you shake them. And during the course of the davening, you shake them as well at the appropriate points. You'll fulfill the mitzvah of lulav. There were some people, the Gemara tells us, in Yerushalayim used to carry around with them throughout the day. Okay. So they did even a better thing. Or the mitzvah of tefillin, let's say. You put on tefillin. We nowadays put on tefillin in Shacharis, and we wear it throughout Shacharit. And we've worn tefillin that day, we fulfill the mitzvah. Minimal, maybe you can do it more. Right? There may be more you can do. Or the mitzvah of challah. And the mitzvah of challah was when you baked a certain amount of dough, you had to take some off and you had to give it to a kohen. So there's a minimal shear, there's a max, there's you can give more, however much it is. How much is the minimum? At what point can I say to myself, maybe my son's not the biggest genius in the world, he won't know all of Torah forever, but I've done something meaningful. Any guesses? Before you read on. What would you think? I don't know if this is the custom here, but I know like in the New York area, many bar mitzvah boys spend a year before their bar mitzvah with their father learning a masechet of Gemara. So they'll learn Megillah or Rosh Hashanah, because those are like around the right length, but in a year of study, you can cover them. So if they're right, and I'm not saying they are or not, but if they're right, it sounds like almost, if you give the child a masechet of shas, that's the minimum mitzvah of it. So, I guess, what would you think? What would you think, yeah? So you're defining it. I'm sorry, I don't know names. I apologize. Let me just get a name.
Ezra.
So Ezra says, maybe I'll define it in terms of a certain feeling for Torah. That the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is that by the time my son reaches adulthood, they should like Torah well enough that they feel connected to tradition and they will pass it on to their sons. That would be very nice. The Gemara's going to go in a different direction, but that's a very nice idea, right? It's a feeling more than an amount. But the Gemara's going to give us an amount. So the Gemara's going to give us name. Is the Gemara's going to name a text and say this is the minimum?
Well, if we go into the book that we're just quoted, it talks about our Sinai. So I guess if you teach a child what the Pesach Seder is all about, you technically have fulfilled.
Ah, so you say? I'm sorry if I got Ezra's name. I'm sorry.
Leo.
Leo says maybe it should be mitzvot connected to Har Sinai or psukim. In Torah, connect to Sinai. So maybe the Pesach Seder would be good. Maybe you could expand that a little bit. So now let's look at the Gemara and see what it does. Those are two good ideas, right? There's a certain amount of material, or there's a certain kind of a desire. Gemara does a very strange thing. Gemara, how much you have to teach? So Rav Yehuda says the name of Shmuel. Kigon Zvulun Vendan. You should be like Zvulun Vendan. I am at the very last verse, the second to last line on the page. On the other side of the page, though. Kigon Zvulun Vendan. Now let's tell the story of Zvulun ben Dan. Zvulun ben Dan's grandfather, Shalimdo Avi Aviv, taught him Mikra, which we're going to assume now means all of Tanakh, or the Chamishah Chumshei Torah, the five books of the Torah, Umishnah, and all of the Mishnah, Uktalmud. What does Talmud, by the way, mean? Now your instinct is to say Gemara, but you got to know that's not right. Why can't that be right? Because the Gemara is writing this. It can't be that. So Talmud has to mean something else. We're going to have to come back to what Talmud is. But the Gemara, understanding, depth of understanding, maybe. Halachot v'agadot. Meaning everything. So if you stop right there, what does it sound like the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is for the father? Everything. And unless you teach him everything, you're in trouble. Which would be very bad because we don't know many people who have succeeded at teaching, certainly not by the time they reach Bar Mitzvah, teaching their sons everything. That's very scary. So the Gemara knows it's scary. The Gemara says, Meitveh. We have a different source that says, Limdo Mikra. Once you teach your son Mikra, now Rashi and the Rambam have a debate. Rashi thinks Mikra means just Chamishah Chumshei Torah, and the Rambam thinks it means all of Tanakh. The Braita says, once you do that, you're done. The father doesn't have to teach his son any more than that. The Amar Rava Mikra Zo Torah. Again, like we said. So the Gemara says, Kizvulun Ben Dan Velob Kizvulun Ben Dan. Like Zvulun Ben Dan, but not totally like Zvulun Ben Dan. What does that mean? Like Zvulun ben Dan and that his grandfather taught it to him. But not like Zvulun ben Dan, that Zvulun ben Dan learned everything. And here the truth is you don't have to teach them everything, you don't have to teach them Mikra. So what's strange about that Gemara? What's odd about the Gemara's citation of Zvulun ben Dan? That this guy Zvulun ben Dan. Why mention him at all? I have a braita that says, once you teach your son Mikra, you're finished. Why do I mention Zvulun ben Dan? So why does the Gemara mention Zvulun ben Dan?
Sorry? It's the highest level.
It's the highest level. The Gemara doesn't want you to think that when I say, once you teach Mikra, you're finished, for us to think you're finished. What we mean is, when the father teaches the son Mikra, he's accomplished something meaningful. He's achieved something. But the whole picture should be the whole picture. So now, just think about this educationally. If we were to take this Gemara seriously, and obviously nobody really does, because it's just the Gemara, but if you were to take this Gemara seriously, what would the mitzvah of Talmud Torah that a father would be required to care about making sure the son knew? What would you require the son to know? Mikra. So Rashi, I gave you the Rashi, I gave you the Rambam. Mikra would be either Torah Shebichtav, five books, or, so I'll tell you a story. I was teaching somewhere last year and I had a bunch of guys, and I said to them, you know, really, ideally, by the time guys are in high school, by the time any Jew is in high school, really, they should be able to open a Chumash anywhere, read it, and know what it's talking about and translate it. And so maybe all of you can do that and you think that's nothing. But they looked at me like I was crazy. They said, people can't really do that. I said, of course people can do that. I can do that. And they said, no, you can't. So we opened a book and I showed them I could do it. So I actually talked to one of them as an Israel this year, and he said, you know, I've started doing it. It's not really not that hard. I said, that's right. It's really not that hard. But it's a whole shift of educational perspective. Imagine the world if every eighth grader, every Jewish eighth grader, finishing eighth grade, was able to read and translate. Let's take Rashi to you. Chamishachum Shei Torah. You open up a Chumash anywhere in Chumash, they can read it, they can know it. So again, maybe here in Toronto, it's like that, and I'm not saying anything that's new for you, but at least in New York, I know that it doesn't happen so much. So that, I think, is already a very big shift. Very big shift. Now, that doesn't mean it's the whole picture. So if you go on to the next source, we'll see there's more to the picture than that, but that's already a picture to think about. So again, and this goes back really to what Leo said, it's just slightly different perspective. Why would it be that all of Torah, or all of Tanakh, would be what I would say is what you have to focus on? If you think back to what we started with. Because what does that keep us in touch with? What does that keep us close to? Har Sinai. Right? At Har Sinai, God told Moshe all of Chamishachum Shei Torah, and possibly you could say, and throughout the rest of history, God told various prophets the other parts of Tanakh. That would be what the Rambam would say. So that's already a very different perspective of what we're trying to do with our Mitzvah Talmud Torah. And by the way, so this is all about fathers and sons, but how could that affect, you know, let's just make up a hypothetical college student, university student at, pick the name of university, York University. So I don't know, it just came to me. So what might this say to somebody who has limited amounts of time in their lives because they have, you know, various responsibilities? What would this say about how one orders one's Talmud Torah time and perspective and goals and desires within Talmud Torah if this Gemara were applicable? What would it say to you? I'm sorry? Maybe Chumash would be first priority. And once you've finished with Chumash, so then, do you have to stop? Can you stop there? So that's Zvulun been done already. That's why we have Zvulun been done in the Gemara. It's not because we don't care about anything else. You start with Chumash. Once you've conquered Chumash, then you move on to other things. So there's actually a Gemara that says a very similar thing. So if you go on, the Gemara Kiddushin then says, so this is right under where it says, is Tanakh all the Torah we need to care about? The Gemara says, Amar Rav Safra Mishum Rishua ben Chananya, when it says, Vishinantam Levanecha, the Gemara says, let's give you a little medrash, but it's a medrash that's valuable. Al tikre Vishinantam, don't read it as you should teach them, Ela Vishilashtam. He should cut it into three. What does that mean? Le'olam Yishalesh Adam Shnotav. He should split your Torah study time into three parts. What are the three parts of Torah study time? Shlish b'mikra, shlish b'mishnah, shlish b'talmud. What does that mean? What are the three parts? What are the three parts of your Torah study time? I'm sorry? I didn't hear. Mikra, mishnah, talmud. What are mikra, mishnah, talmud? Just as a guess. So mikra, we already said, is either chumash or tanah. What's mishnah? That's an easy one. So that one you should be able to. That's Gemara's writing. So what does Gemara mean by Mishnah? Mishnah. That's good. And Talmud? So let's see. So Rashi says, it's just underneath that Gemara. Rashi says, Gemara, that's the word he had in his Girsa, Svarot, the underlying reasons, V'tameisti matehen shel Mishneot, the reasons why the Mishnah rules a certain way, Uletartzam b'masha sotrot zo et zo. And to figure out why, when you have a Mishnah that seems to contradict another Mishnah, why it does so. In other words, Rashi is saying, Gemara means deeply understanding the Mishnah. The Rambam is going to go in a different direction in a second, but there's an underlying question I just think is really fun to talk about. What did the Gemara say you should split up into three? What was the word the Gemara used? The Gemara says, Shnotav, which means your years. Now, if you wanted to be a real stickler about it, what would that suggest about how you should proceed in your Torah study time? Shlish b'mikra, shlish b'mishnah, shlish b'tamlur. What do you do? You spend a third of your life studying Chumash, a third of your life, then the next third studying Mishnah, and the next third studying Gemara. And the problem with that, the Gemara knows, is you know how long you're going to live. So the Gemara says, no, we mean daily. Mi lo tzricha liyome, for days. So if you look at the Tosfot, which I won't read inside, but you look at the Tosfot, Rashi says the days of the week. Which means that Rashi seems to have thought what the Gemara means is Sunday and Monday you learn Chumash, Tuesday and Wednesday you learn Mishnah, and Thursday and Friday you learn Gemara, which for Rashi means you delve into it more deeply in understanding. Why won't Tosos like that? Why won't Tosos like that? What's the problem? Shabbos is always day off, so you might do something else. That, we always get a day off for Shabbos, that's what Shabbos is. But the same question. Tosos says, you know how you're going to live? Because maybe you'll die on Wednesday, and then you'll have missed out on your Thursday and Friday of Gemara. So Tosos, it's in there in Tosos. So Tosos says, every day should be divided into three parts. And Tosos wonders why they don't do it. And Tosos comes up with this famous, I'm sorry? It's true. There's a limit. There's always a limit. That's right. So that's probably why Rashi didn't care. But that's probably the answer for Rashi. Rashi would say, you have to make a choice somewhere. I don't think that the losing the 2 days in a week, if you die on a Wednesday, is so significant. But Tosos then points out, just at the very end of that Tosos, Rabbi Natan says, well, we don't do that at all. So Rabbi Natan says, yeah, because we think the Bavli, the Gemara that we use, has it all in it anyway, so we think it all covers it. Now, that may or may not be true, but that suggests that when you come across a Pasuk in Gemara, what do you need to do? You need to actually learn the Pasuk. Right? I can't tell you how many times I've been with Chavrusas, I've heard people give Shiurim, and they come across a Pasuk in Tanakh, and not only don't they learn the Pasuk in Tanakh, but they don't even read it right. They don't even get the words right. So if Rabbeinu Tam is saying that we can divide our Torah study time into three and use the Gemara Bavli for it because it has everything to it, he at least means that when you come across Psukim and Mishnayot and other material, you have to get it straight. You have to understand it. So, but that is an underlying principle that we don't just learn Chumash. We do more than that. And now if you look in this in the Rambam, and this is all, we're almost at the end, but if you look at the Rambam, he has this idea as well. You have to split up your time into three, only the way he presents it brings back to the idea that maybe physics could be some kind of a Talmud Torah, kind of an experience. The Rambam says, V'chayav l'shalesh etzban limidato. A third in Torah shebichtam, a third in Torah shebe'al peh. Notice he turned the word Mishnah into Torah shebe'al peh. What's the difference between Mishnah and Torah shebe'al peh? Is Mishnah the same thing as Torah shebe'al peh? Mishnah is a part of Torah Shebe'al Peh, as the Rambam is going to tell us. So the Rambam is understanding when the Gemara says, Mikra Mishnah Talmud, the Mishnah component doesn't mean, even though they had that corpus, it doesn't mean just Mishnah. It means all of received Torah knowledge that's not really written in Torah. And now look at the last third. Ushlish, Yavin V'yaskil Acharit Davar Merishito. Yavin v'yaskil acharit davar merishito. You understand the end of something from the beginning of it. What does that mean? You understand the end of something from the beginning of it. I'll read a little bit more and then you'll say what it means. V'yasi davar mi davar. And you take an inference out of the material that you have. V'yidameh davar davar. And you make similarities between one and the other. And you understand, the Rambam says, how you infer things from the Torah, and you understand how you can learn it from the psukim. All of that is called Gemara, the Rambam says. What does that mean? What is Gemara for the Rambam? What does it mean by Gemara? So what do all those words mean, the Rambam was saying? What are you attaining? You studied Chumash, and then you studied Torah Shebe'al Peh, and then you spend a third of your time deepening your understanding, seeing how you get from one inference to the next, understanding the Midot Shel Torah and Drash Shebe'al Peh. The Rambam is saying you come to a deeper understanding such that you can understand the system and how it works. You understand everything about Torah and how it works. That's a whole new level. And he goes on in the next halacha, and he says you go on from there, and eventually he says, if you understand the world, that can be part of Gemara. You can read halacha, you bet for yourselves. It's another perspective. But what you have in all of this is this sort of tension. I put this Igros Moshe there at the bottom because Rav Moshe Feinstein assumes that you really have to learn everything. Which is very interesting. In the light of everything that we've seen that Rav Moshe knew as well or better than I know, Rav Moshe says, nonetheless, there is really to know all of the Torah Kula, if you can. But what I think you have in the sources is that along the way, if you haven't gotten to Kol HaTorah Kula yet, there are different ways that you can make this process towards knowing Kol HaTorah Kula. And there's a different sense of what it's supposed to be about, and of the attitude you're supposed to have, and the set of materials you're supposed to be acquiring as you go on. There's this thing called Mikra. There's this thing called Mishnah, which the Rambam says to be all of the received traditions of Jewish history. So for the Rambam, let's say, the Gaonim's writings for the Rambam would be where? Where would you put the Gaonim's writings for the Rambam? Would they be part of Mikra? They'd be part of Mishnah. Because they're part of the received tradition that was outside of Chumash. And then our own understandings, the deepening of our understanding of Torah, that's a whole third of our time. Which means, for the Rambam, If I spend all of my time just reading books and not thinking deeply about them, what am I missing for the Rambam? What part of my Torah is lacking?
One third.
I don't have the Gemara part. Because for the Rambam, Gemara is that I take what I've been taught and I try to understand where it came from and how it came about and the underlying rules and principles of the system. And if I'm not doing that, I'm not getting the whole experience. So what I think that the Gemara and the Rashi and the Rambam and Rav Moshe show us, that this Talmud Torah is a whole lot bigger but a whole lot different than just the question of, do I spend an hour a day learning or do not spend an hour a day learning? And then the question really is, to what extent am I connecting myself back to Har Sinai regularly? Connecting myself, and one day hopefully connecting my children to Har Sinai. And how am I doing it? Am I doing it just passively, learning and reading and knowing a lot of stuff without thinking about it? Or am I doing it actively in a way in which I deepen my understanding of it and I get to an ever-deepening understanding of what's going on in Torah? So all of that I think is really interesting, especially at a stage when, you know, many of us here are, for the first time in our lives, beginning to develop a relationship with Torah that is not imposed by any system that we have other than the one we give to it. Right? So, you know, you go to elementary school and you learn Torah because it's elementary school. You go to high school, you learn Torah because it's in high school. You go to Israel, so they tell you what you're supposed to be learning. And then you get out, and your relationship to Torah is now yours. And it's your... Is that not true?
No, I go to
Stern. Oh. All right. You got a few years until, but it will become true at some point. Yeah. There's always one in every crowd. Has to ruin it. There I am in the middle of closing up, and now I'm all sidetracked. Let me start from the beginning. Let me try again. No, but you have this relationship with Torah that now is, for the first time, very much a question of yours. So the question is, what yours will it be? So these are some of the ideas that I think are just worth putting into that mix and trying to understand. I've probably spoken way too long and way too much. I think there's refreshments here, and I can take questions now, but I can also take them in private afterwards. And so if there are any questions right now, I'm happy to take any questions people want to raise. But other than that, I thank you for your time, and I hope that it was a little bit productive for us. Yeah? Yeah.
Sorry, I just probably come and know that I wasn't asking a lot of questions. The psukim are always referring to Rashi, like the first...
These psukim that I quoted for you.
Yes.
Yes.
How do we get...
Tradition is that Har Sinai did not only involve the direct commandment of God in direct word, it also was this whole oral tradition that Moshe brought down and that taught to Yehoshua and that Yehoshua gave to the elders and the elders, etc. So it's all part of the Har Sinai packet. Har Sinai wasn't the words of the Aseret HaDibrot. It was the words of the Aseret HaDibrot and all of the rest of the Torah that Hashem told Moshe there on the Mount, and then all of the oral Torah that never got written down specifically or not until hundreds of years later, that's all part of Har Sinai. So it's really all embedded in there in that picture. Okay. Yeah.
How do this idea of dividing what science is here, as I'm about to describe it, how does that apply, or how do we apply that, or should we apply that to much, if someone has much smaller piece of time available, they want their own to this example?
Yeah, the Rambam's example is pretty daunting. So I think the answer, that's a good question. I mean, if you only have an hour a day, does that mean you have to do it 20-20-20? So there, I think, if you only have a limited amount of time, such that it's only productive to do one thing at a time, then you might want to rely on Rashi and say, you know what, I'll do 2 days a week this, 2 days a week this, 2 days. And the truth is, everybody seems to agree that as you become more advanced, you might not need to stick to the full one-third, one-third, one-third. If somebody really can read Chumash quickly, you know, I can read the weekly Parsha probably in an hour. So do I need to spend a third of all of my week on Chumash if I'm keeping up in some reasonable way, even without that much? There, the Rambam at least, and probably Rashi also say, not necessarily. There already can move on. But certainly you have to keep track, but you have to keep in mind that all of these elements have to always be there. And if you leave one totally, you know, years ago I used to give a Shabbat morning shiur at a certain shul. It was a Gemara shiur. And there was a man who gave a parallel shiur in that week's Parsha. And he was going to be away 1 week. And he comes up to me and says, do you think you could substitute for me? Can you give a Chumash shiur? And I said, you know, I think it's part of Torah. I'm not sure. So that whole attitude, that whole idea. And if somebody gets caught up without being aware of Torah and Mishnah and Gemara, so that I think becomes problematic. I don't know if that's exactly a third, a third, a third.
Why is it that there's such a focus on Gemara?
So, I think it comes from two things. One is, there's this Rabbeinu Tam, who says that the Bavli that we have has all of it in it. So that became convenient. But I think it's more because Gemara is so challenging, technically and physically, and technically and intellectually, that people got used to not having time for all this other stuff. But the truth is that if you look at Gedolim, from all the generations, their knowledge of Tanakh and of other things was unassailable. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was very proud of the fact that in his lifetime he went through Tanakh 80 times. Right, so, and if you read, let's say, the Ramban on Chumash, the Ramban is a member of a group of people whose style was to write citing Psukim. They wouldn't write, you know, if I was going to write English and I knew the King James Version of the Bible so well, then instead of saying whatever phrase I wanted to say, I could pick out a phrase from Tanakh that said it. That's the way the Ramban wrote. That's what makes him hard to understand. So his knowledge of Tanakh was, you know, like this. The Rambam as well. So the answer is, I think it's a fairly recent kind of a thing, that you leave aside Tanakh. But it is true that if somebody was, you know, 45 or 50 and a knowledgeable Jew, and they were really still giving the same amount of time to Tanakh as they were giving to Gemara, that's probably shortchanging, because Gemara does take more involvement and more time physically to put into it to get to the same level of understanding as in Tanakh. But the leaving aside of Tanakh is a very recent phenomenon, a very bad one. Bad is such a bad word. It's an unfortunate one. Is what we might want to, is a choice we might want to reconsider as me not fully fortunate. See how good I am? All right. Thank you very much. It was nice to, I hope I get to meet you more in person. It was nice to meet all of you, and thank you for your time.